Hey everybody, Zach here. This episode went very long. We've been trying to keep them to an, I'm sure, barely tolerable 1 hour, but this movie's so fun we got a bit carried away. This episode actually outlasts the movie itself by about 5 minutes, so that's fun. Anyway, length notwithstanding, hope you enjoy this week's ep.
Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better.
Now I have the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear, it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
All right, hey, welcome back, everyone, to Faking Movies. This is a show, as always, about cinematic blind spots, and we are here to pounce on those blind spots like a really rude, interrupting lion.
Ooh, well, one of those things is for sure true, yes.
Yeah.
The interrupting part.
I think we are lazy like a male lion. I think that scans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just proud of myself right there for not interrupting you like I
would
normally
do
in the intro, because you said you wanted to do something different. So
yeah, hey. No, thank you. I appreciate it.
It's been about a dozen eps since we had like a genuine regular intro. Yeah.
Look at my fucking restraint.
Hey, Seth. Hey, well done, bud.
Yeah, cheers, brother.
Let's pat ourselves on the back before we even get started.
Yeah.
So this is episode, I believe, 44.
Correct.
Yep.
All right, cool. So yeah, like I said, this is about cinematic blind spots, and some cinematic blind spots are very sensible. Like, it makes sense that even though Seth really loves Nick Cage, he wouldn't have seen fucking It Could Happen to You.
Yeah, that's true.
Certainly.
I mean, I think you mean It Could Happen to You.
Yeah.
We always do.
Yeah. And like, Zach's not a huge fan of older movies, it makes sense that Zach maybe hadn't seen Network. Here's one that doesn't really make sense. We're joined this week by our good friend Tom. Hey Tom, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Good to hear. He's coming at us with the kind of blind spot that like causes car accidents, because he's never seen Dirty Dancing.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just
gravitas. I mean, guys, I'll be honest. I apparently also had never seen Dirty Dancing, but I didn't realize it until I was halfway through this movie. But we'll get to that in my section.
It sounded to me like you had maybe seen around Dirty Dancing. So that was like,
I had seen Dirty Dancing so little that I watched Super Bowl with Lee. And there was the Super Bowl commercial that apparently made fun of a major dance from Dirty Dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what was that? Mm-hmm. And that's how we're doing this episode.
Our master list.
Baseball, our master list, which we keep to like figure out what's coming up next or whatever. Tom, you've been on there for a bit, I guess since the Super Bowl. And it said, Tom, Dirty Dancing, parentheses, I think, comma, we were drunk, ? Close parentheses. So this just showed up one day and we were like, that sounds promising, and I'm very glad that this worked out, because
thrilled. Also, I had seen Dirty Dancing so little that I was talking to my partner about my plans for the movie that I'm creating, and she said, so when are you going to put Baby in a Corner? And I was like,
oh no, Sarah, no.
What?
Hey, don't give away too much.
Because I didn't know that line was from Dirty Dancing. I figured it was from, my best guess, Bringing Up Baby.
Oh.
No.
Well, okay.
Zach, don't play along like you know what that is.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, it had the word baby in it, so it makes sense. There was some recognition in there.
Yeah. you recognized a word that's in English. All right.
I know oh, some words. Man. I know like a couple.
Job. Yeah. Shit.
So
all right. Well, yeah, before, well, we have some shit to talk about that line, but we'll save it for the way later.
And before we get into it, Tom's here with me recording. I try to do that sometimes when I have a local guest. Tom, why don't you show, or at least tell our audience, since it's audio, how long your Dirty Dancing is. It's, first of all, I'm going to point out it is single spaced.
So it's on to the fourth page. Oh my God. I believe the word count was 2,300 words. this is a conference paper.
Yeah, basically. It's,
actually, I'm sorry. It's a little long for a conference paper. It's a conference paper I need to edit down.
Oh yeah,
so I'm going to be doing some live editing.
Yeah, okay.
Excellent. I like this.
Also, we're going to be interrupting you the whole time, so
And
get ready for that.
So the first ever three
I watched this today, and I remember telling you boys, I was like, fuck, I have to actively stop taking notes because I have also a shitload of them at this point, so it's going to be a doozy.
There's some really wonderful stuff to talk about for this movie. And with that in mind, I think we should jump in. Tom.
Yeah, fucking kick us off.
What's your cast? Who do we give you?
All right, so I have Dirty Dancing, a movie from the 80s starring Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey, Wayne Knight, Jerry Orbach, and Kelly Bishop.
I believe I told you...
We went light.
Okay. Yeah, I believe I told you... Miss Emily Gilmore herself, Bishop. Yeah.
Yes.
Because fucking respect.
And I was really excited when I found out Wayne Knight was in this. I joked to Lee that my plot was going to be Wayne Knight disappears into a phone booth and all of a sudden turns into the Dirty Dancer.
Oh, shit. I would watch that.
Or that he would be a millionaire CEO of a company who is a pickup artist whose online handle is the Dirty Dancer.
A little less likely, somehow.
But instead I got something else.
Yeah, and let's just for our audience, in case they're not familiar, Wayne Knight, of course, is most famous for playing on a very classic American sitcom. He's, of course, Officer Don Orville from Third Rock from the Sun.
How long were you sitting on that one, buddy?
I just thought of that.
He definitely didn't use it in his text conversation with me earlier.
No.
That's very
definitely
good.
Not.
I was hoping it would be the comedic retelling of Jurassic Park, but I like it.
As you can imagine, Tom, music is very important to this.
Yes. Well, I just listened to that episode.
There you go. All right.
I had to prepare for my role.
Yes.
His name was Dennis Nedry in that episode, in case anyone.
His name was Dennis Nedry.
Yeah. He would have been good in the role.
He would have. I hate that movie, though. Yeah.
Everyone does.
You hate Jurassic Park?
No.
Monster.
God, obviously not.
I'm the talking Palinic, about his
the Palinic retelling of Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Fuck.
They just all die. The end.
Yeah.
It's like 15 minutes long. Good stuff.
Okay.
All right. Well, Tom.
We should let you get going. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Before we interrupt you more.
Well.
So, Dirty Dancing.
Interruption.
There it is. That's my boy.
Interrupting cow. Who?
Moo?
Oh, it's a Jurassic Park joke. I get it. Okay.
Is it?
Guts.
No.
Yeah,
they were guts.
No, it really isn't. But okay. Anyway, Tom, what's your movie about?
All right.
Attempt number three.
So, our movie starts with an aerial establishing shot of the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, okay. You got shot in this?
Was it Earth all along?
It is still Earth all along.
Oh my God.
So, the camera establishes the shot of the Statue of Liberty and then zooms into Manhattan, eventually settling on a man walking down the streets. He's wearing a trucker hat that's the American flag, and we see that he's Patrick Swayze.
This is going to cost so much money. We are so far zoomed
out. No. This first shot is the most expensive shot in the show.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, this is where they blew up their entire budget.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love
and
it.
Since they shot it in chronological order, they were screwed for the rest of the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all dialogue. Just keep going. Yeah. We have
it's
six. It's going to
be a real My Dinner with Andre sort of situation.
I legitimately like that movie, but.
You know. Me too. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Sure.
So he turns a corner. He walks. The camera follows him. We see that he's wearing a leather jacket with a big stitchwork bald eagle on the back.
Naturally.
Oh, hell yeah.
The camera keeps following him as he's walking. You know, the credits roll. It's a big touch of evil. Nice opening shot.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
He walks in. He eventually enters a building. He walks inside to a darkened room, and he takes his jacket off to reveal underneath a leotard.
Oh yeah, boy.
And then the lights
get some Staying Alive vibes from this right now.
Then the lights come on, and we see that he's in a dance studio. There's a woman, Jennifer Grey, at the other side of the room. She smiles at Swayze.
This is a good instinct you had about
he
this
He smiles
movie.
Back and says, Strasvoitsia, Sally.
Oh!
She responds,
uh-oh.
Morning, Dimitri!
He's a defector? Man.
Cue the title card.
Which is Dirty Dancing, I
think. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, no,
it's
making
it's
sure.
Still called Dirty Dancing. I was under the impression that that's the rule.
It's in Cyrillic. Oh, well, hey, we've had weirder editorial.
It is actually in fucking Cyrillic on my
My God.
Excellent.
Oh, my God.
You got this. Wonderful. You got this pandering going.
I was
going
to say, you know Seth's whole deal, right?
Actually, I don't.
This is some good Baryshnikov echoes.
He
coming off in the
background. He has
background.
A Russian background.
I got it from the earlier fucking around.
You did some good accidental pandering in that case.
Yeah. Good job.
All right, so the movie flashes back to 10 years ago. Dmitri is in Moscow, a young but promising ballerino at the Bolshoi.
Ballerino.
He is, yes, ballerino.
Mm-hmm.
Word that may or may not exist.
It does. I dated a ballerina. It's a thing. Yeah.
So he's on.
Hey, you dated a ballerino? I didn't know that about you.
Well, not to my knowledge. I think it was the other one. But
this is a new wrinkle to your character. See what we mean about the interruptions?
Yeah.
We don't use that.
I listened to Sarah's episode.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For the listeners at home, I am the partner of good friend of the show, Sarah, who is nearly ready to forget.
Ooh, nope. Sarah Beep. Sarah Beep. Yeah.
Sarah Fart Noise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't
dox anyone.
Previous...
God, what the fuck?
Sarah was the previously most abused guest, I'm sure you know. So I guess we're looking to dethrone tonight.
She has held that crown for nigh on 18 episodes now. So.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
Not anymore, because Baryshnikov is in the picture.
So anyway, Swayze's performing on stage. We see a portly man, Wayne Knight, watching from the audience. Yeah. he comes over to Dimitri's dressing room afterward. He introduces himself as Lieutenant Colonel Dragushnya. He says, "Hello, Dimitri. We've been following your progress for quite a while. It's not too often that anyone graduates early from Moscow University with honors in both dance and Marxist-Leninist studies."
Is this a regular The Americans situation that you're setting up?
Kind of feels
we'll
like
see.
It.
We'll
is
see.
There... Is there a graphic 69ing scene in this? Because,
you know, everybody talks about that. It wasn't that graphic. It was pretty tender.
You know,
for a cable channel, it was fairly graphic. It was...
I gotta edit this thing down so I could always insert that.
Sure. I mean, who wouldn't want to 69 with Matthew Reese? That's all I'm saying.
Also Patrick Swayze, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, he's been dead for a long time, so.
Yep. That joke got weird quick. Well done.
Yeah. You know how it goes.
This is not the first corpse fucking joke on our show, so, you know.
Sadly.
Sadly.
So Patrick Swayze has graduated with honors.
Yes. He's double major in dance and Marxist-Leninist studies. He wrote
Moskovsky Государственный университет имени Ломоносова.
Duh.
Wow.
Strong.
What?
And he wrote his senior thesis exclaiming that communism is the best, or ballet is the best way of proclaiming communist freedom throughout the world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So Wayne Knight, as Dorgushnya, wants to recruit him to the KGB to be a secret agent.
Sure.
As one does.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Swayze is swayed. And he agrees.
Bonus points. They will be added to your total at the end.
Set to a 80s synth rock version of the Nutcracker Suite of him training for the next 5 years to be a spy.
By Jan Hammer.
Okay. No doubt. Yeah. A lot of montage. Are there many montages? Because that would be.
There's at least one more. Movie.
Okay, good.
Okay,
good.
Perfect. Yeah.
By which I mean there's one more.
Okay.
Okay. Factually.
And also, I want to emphasize that there's not a single Russian actor in this movie, and everyone is speaking in remarkably bad Russian accents.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. But they're all speaking English and Russian accents.
No, Russian, just bad Russian accents.
It's K-19, the Widowmaker. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Or I was going to say, me and Seth Sean Connery has ever done, but yeah.
Yeah.
Seth and I were doing this beforehand. Like, we were literally listening to Russian music before this started.
My
name is Juan Villalobos Ramirez. I'm Egyptian, and I represent the King of Spain.
We are talking mostly about Eugene Chutz from Gogol Bordello, and how he has just the most ridiculous accent, and is wonderful. Oh,
it's very good.
Yes, the art wearing purple,
wearing purple.
Oh man, so much fun. Right. Sorry. No Russian actors.
So 5 years later. Dimitri goes to Wayne Knight's office, and Wayne Knight is ready to give him his first big mission.
So we're still in Russia.
Okay. 5 years later.
Okay.
Dimitri, played by Patrick Swayze, is to, so there's the World Ballet Competition coming up, and they want Dimitri to perform in it and bring pride to Mother Russia.
Yeah, think of like the Eurovision Song Competition, but
is it like the Olympics? Okay,
the most important dance competition in the world.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely,
but they're not. Absolutely. But they want some collateral or some insurance. So
why not
they,
both?
Yeah. So Dragushnya gives Swayze a slip of paper. Some microfilm.
Of course.
Which contains the formula for a brand new variety of poison, newly invented by Kremlin scientists.
Yeah, you got microfilm in there?
Completely untraceable.
I'm not going to, like, I don't want to step on your story here, but, like, in what world do people need to put, like, a lot of effort and research into making new poisons? We've got some pretty good poisons.
Well, you haven't seen this poison.
This ain't your daddy's poison.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you want them to be untraceable, I think, like, making a new thing would be reasonable.
Probably. Yeah, and then, like, I mean, there's recent news, 2 weeks old at this point. you know, about that murder in the UK.
In the Britain. Yeah.
Yeah. Although that was old poison.
Yeah, that was.
They found it real quick, turns out.
Yeah.
So, like, help me understand. If arsenic is Coca-Cola, is this new poison the new Coke?
Well, yeah, it'll be around forever.
No, this new poison is... This is Crystal Pepsi. We're talking.
Yeah, this is
real.
This is Pepsi done, next.
You done change the game, boys. This is Pepsi Kona. A six-month-long Pepsi experiment that combined Pepsi with coffee.
Yeah, I drank some of that once. That was a bad plan.
Yeah.
Just once, though.
Yeah. Well, that's still just, coming down.
You really wouldn't have had another chance to do it, so.
So anyway, he gives them this formula for a new poison. He says that Dimitri is to meet a agent in New York, the bear, who will create the poison from him.
Of course, it's a bear. Yeah,
there's a title. The there's a character named the Bear, and it wasn't a gay Wayne Knight, because that seems very obvious in hindsight.
Is it
something I really wanted to do? But
is it just a fatherly Jerry Orbach?
No. I'll spoil it now. When we meet the bear later on,
Oh, this is a reveal later. Wait till later. Yeah, wait till later. I want my mind blown. Yeah.
So then he gives him a dossier. There's a man inside. Billy Shazam, played by Jerry.
It's just a combination of Billy Batson and Shazam from Shazam.
Well, yes, it is two words that exist.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Shazam is Billy Batson. That's not even... Anyway, go on.
So Billy Shazam is the greatest American dancer in the world. And
that does sound Dimitri, like a good name for that.
That checks out, yeah.
Yeah.
Dimitri is supposed to assassinate him using the poison so that Russia can surely win the World Ballet Competition.
Such high stakes!
And thus the Cold War, presumably, right?
Yes. Like,
yeah.
and then after that, Dimitri is to remain in New York as a sleeper agent.
Naturally.
Mm.
Sure.
Back in the present, still in the dance studio, Dimitri and Sally, who is Jennifer Grey's character,
they
have a great dance sequence, because they're dance partners. And they have a bit of small talk. They talk about the upcoming World Ballet Competition.
Is this a different one?
Yes.
Okay.
The first one since the one that was mentioned in the flashback.
I see. So we still don't know how that one turned out, I'm assuming?
No, not at this point.
Okay.
So after their dance sequence, where they have some very obvious chemistry together, they go out for a bite to eat. This is the iconic burger sequence.
Okay.
They talk about their past, and Sally explains that, before she came to New York, she was just a girl from a small town called Fomont, Oklahoma. Everyone in the town was extremely religious, and ballet dancing was illegal.
Hang on!
So but Sally knew that she was destined to be a ballerina, and after getting a boost of confidence from a newcomer to the town, who was tragically killed in a game of tractor chicken, she decided to leave her family behind.
You're talking about a movie I really love.
And also a movie that, in my mind, was exactly the same as Dirty Dancing.
It's funny that you mention that. You'll find out more later.
Indeed. Yep.
Dimitri's very moved by Sally's story. He talks about, freedom. He just blathers on about freedom for a little while.
Yeah.
And then says, hey, let's get out of here. They go back to his place. They have very, very tender making love.
Tasteful.
Yeah.
Yes, tasteful. Yeah. Tasteful and tender. Set to an original song by Carly Simon.
In the mid-80s by Carly Simon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Late in the game, but that's good. Yeah.
You're so veiny. I bet you.
No. Wait, is that about Patrick Swayze's Duroc?
Oh boy.
Not a fan.
I ruined it. I'm sorry, guys. We have to cancel the show now.
You made this uncomfortable.
We could just repurpose Nobody Does It Better from The Spy Who Loved Me.
There's lots of options here.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Anything from Tapestry, really, because that album's wonderful.
There are lots of musical artists from the 80s.
There are a couple.
I can think of at least three.
Okay, so after they have sex, Sally thanks him for a wonderful evening, and she goes home. She opens up the door to her apartment and switches on the light. And there, sitting in an easy chair across the room from her, is Wayne Knight, Colonel Dragushnya.
Okay. Of course.
And he says, Strastvoitsya, Olga.
So she's also
We need to activate the cuckoo.
Oh, my.
Okay. So I'm assuming at this point, she knows that Patrick Swayze is a sleeper agent, but he does not know that she is.
So she is about to find out because Wayne Knight hands her a dossier with him in it and says, this is your next target.
Oh,
she says, he's a good man! Yeah, and Dragushnya says, he is a traitor!
Yeah, he's clearly gone rogue.
Ah, okay.
I have so many questions about how much you know about Russian like film and literature right now, because, oh my god.
There's a Cuckoos? Lot of pride for Mother Russia needing to be brought here.
Seems like it. Yep.
So Olga's distraught, but with the World Ballet Competition coming up, Dragushnya emphasizes that this is the most important thing that can be done for Russia to eliminate Swayze because
before the competition. Before the competition.
Well, yeah, because he's going to be competing for America.
Oh, yeah. He's naturalized. And he's going to kick ass.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
You know, it's like World Cup rules where like if you have even the slightest possibility of being in a country.
I mean, the Olympics just ended a few weeks ago. Like I understand. Yeah.
And then her final task is she needs to retrieve a roll of microfilm that Dimitri has in his possession.
I see.
Yep.
Okay, so there's another montage. She keeps, so this is over the next few weeks as they're training for the World Ballet Competition. Mm-hmm. They get closer and closer together. They have lots of sex. She also, throughout this montage, keeps, like, planning to kill Dimitri, but then unable to do it at the last moment. So we see her, like, calling off lots of assassination plans.
I'm imagining the song that they use for the training montage in Rocky IV during
pretty much
very Russian.
A
lot of like slamming their fist in frustration.
So at the end of the montage, she goes back in her apartment, finds Wayne Knight waiting for her again, says we're very disappointed in you, the World Ballet Competition is this upcoming weekend and you haven't killed Dimitri yet. What's going on?
Yeah, because, like, the closer the competition, the more of a martyr he's going to be.
For sure. Yeah, they want him taken out early.
So,
she's just dragging her murder feet.
Yeah. So Dragushina says, we thought that you might be a little hesitant. So we have some collateral. I think that's right. It's a capitalist word. and he pulls open some curtains to the balcony, and Olga sees her mother bound and tied out there.
I'm guessing it's a cast member yet to be named.
Yes, it is indeed Kelly Bishop.
Yeah, okay.
I thought you were going to say, I'm guessing they were iron curtains? No?
Oh.
Is that the wrong war? I don't know.
I mean, like, it's not the worst mistake, I guess.
Yeah.
So Olga knows she has to either kill Dimitri or her mother dies. So she newly, you know, reinvigorated. She goes to try to kill Dimitri at his house the next night. She stays over. He's sleeping. She gets ready to stab him, but he, like, coughs and wakes up and sees the knife. They have a fight sequence with each other, with lots of ballet moves.
And does it turn passionate? I assume.
I'm not a big fan of that though.
The ballet move choreographed Gymkhana style fight scene.
Yeah, Gymkhana, of course. Yeah.
And so you know, Swayze breaks down. He grabs. He wins, of course, because it's the 80s. Patriarchy still reigns. He grabs a knife, prepares to kill Jennifer Grey, but can't do it. He says, why I loved you, and then she spills the beans, what's going on. Dimitri's shocked. He explains the situation, why he defected. It turns out when he was supposed to kill Billy Shazam, the greatest American dancer in the world, he saw Billy hugging his child and just couldn't go through with it. Okay. And he realized that that true freedom is only found in America. True morality is only found in America. And so he just couldn't go through with it. So he goes back to the bear and decides to use the poison to kill him instead. And I will say at this point that the bear is in a cameo played by Yakov Smirnoff.
That would be
timely. That would be very timely.
You could get him out of Branson for a second? Wow.
Yeah. I've actually seen Yakov Smirnoff in Russia.
Whoa, really?
It was terrible. Like, not even good terrible, just terrible, terrible.
Soviet Russia, even Swayze, kill you! Yeah.
Well, so his last line written in here is, impossible! In Soviet Union, poison kills you! And he points to Patrick Swayze as he says it.
So he poisons Swayze and kills him?
No. He doesn't understand that the poison can kill him.
Okay,
so, and we find out that America won the World Ballet Competition since Billy Shazam was still able to...
Billy Shazam.
National treasure, Jerry Orbach.
So back in the back in the present, Billy gives a spiel about how much he loves America now and how America would never do something like kidnap one's aged mother and use her as collateral to ensure that you kill someone else.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting you bring this up.
Right.
I have to, when you said that for a second, and I love my mother deeply, like she's the best, but I had to think like, could I kill Patrick Swayze to save my mom? It'd be a real Sophie's Choice.
Yeah. I don't believe you. I think you would not have any hesitation to save your mom.
I wouldn't, but I feel like a lot of people would be like, eh, Patrick Swayze, probably. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, it depends on how committed to Sparkle Squad you are.
Well.
Yeah, I'd definitely kill Swayze to save my mom, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, me
no
too.
No doubt.
All right, so Olga is convinced by
that's for all the moms out there.
Yeah. Love you, Ma. I mean, I know that sounded sarcastic, but I really
this,
do.
Well, this podcast famously not a fan of dads, but moms.
Me especially.
Well, yeah. just you guys. Both Lee and I are both big fans of our fathers.
That's true.
Yeah, I get along
friend
really
of the
long.
Show, Eva. Get even. Let's talk about this.
Just a little. Just sorry to screw up the flow of your movie even more.
It's all right.
I actually asked friends of the show, Eva and Sarah, if they wanted to come in here and talk about the actual movie briefly, since you know it's all dudes talking about this movie.
Yeah.
And they said no.
They both declined.
They both declined.
They trusted us. They trusted us to cover the female perspective on this 80s movie?
I don't know if I'd phrase it that way.
That seems unlikely. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems very unlikely.
I mean, we'll do our... I think honestly, we will do our best, but...
Maybe.
Well, so, Tom, 5 years ago, Jerry Orbach wins the ballet competition.
Yes, yes.
Yakov Smirnoff, the bear, is dead now from poison, from Peaceways.
That's right.
Yeah. Where are we at now? What's happening?
All right, so... So Dimitri, you know, mentions that America would never do something like kidnap one's mother, to et cetera. Never, ever, ever, ever. And so Olga is convinced by this. She decides she's going to defect also. They hatch a plan to go rescue Olga's mother from the warehouse or wherever that she's being held. There's a big action sequence where they have to do like lots of balletic leaps across gaps and like spin kicks.
Yes.
This is great stuff. I love this. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of dance fighting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah.
They eventually get to her. You know, they cut her restraints. She's cold from the night air, so Swayze puts his American Eagle, bald eagle leather jacket on her shoulders, and he says, "Okay, I know a safe place we can take her." And they go to Billy Shazam's house because he's a CIA agent in addition to being the best American. And he's been protecting Dimitri ever since he defected 5 years ago, and he promises that he'll protect Olga and her mother as well.
Naturally,
not bad. Yep.
So at this point, the only thing that's left is the World Ballet Competition itself.
Sure.
Dimitri, Olga, and Billy are all competing for America, and they do very well. They get extremely high marks. Then the Russians come out, and they're led by an unexpected new dance captain, Wayne Knight, Lieutenant Colonel Dragushnya, also master ballerino. Under his leadership, they also do extremely well and get the exact same score as the Americans.
Do they end the Cold War?
There is a tiebreaker, which under traditional ballet rules, each team sends out its best dancer.
Sure.
Of course, Dimitri and Dragushnya.
Yeah.
And each dancer has to perform their best ballet move, and the other one has to attempt to copy it. And if they fail,
like ballet horse.
Ballet horse. Of course, yeah.
Got served going on. Right
yeah.
The ballet is a horse, of course, of course.
So you know, if they fail, you know, you get a point. And after a very intense montage sequence, both Dimitri and Dragushnya have 4 points. They're both visibly exhausted. Mm-hmm. But Patrick Swayze goes for broke. he performs the legendary septuple pirouette into a triple axel into a quadruple headspin.
Oh, we're deep into Blades of Glory territory right now. No one does that. No, it killed him.
Cutting edge going in here too. Yeah.
Dragoshin attempts to copy, but he falls over on the last head rotation.
He got close.
A giant American flag unfurls in the background of the stage. Dimitri has won the World Ballet Competition.
Mm-hmm.
Unable to take the shame, Wayne Knight pulls a gun on Dimitri.
What?
It's very unclear where he was hiding the gun.
I think it's actually very clear where he was hiding the gun.
It's in the dance belt. It's always in the dance belt.
Okay.
It's the only spot.
I was going to say leg warmer, but all right.
So Dimitri holds up his hands, but...
I was going to say up his butt, but... Okay.
we hear lots of guns cocked behind Dimitri, and all of the other American ballet dancers are holding guns because they're all CIA agents.
Every single one of them. This is, you know, Tom's suspending a lot of disbelief so far.
I'm
going to continue.
This is a lot of CIA forethought here.
They all have their guns trained on Wayne Knight. He looks mad with anger, and he steps aside to reveal that one of his ballet KGB agents, because of course they're all also KGB agents, has Olga.
Makes sense at that point.
They're holding her at gunpoint, and he says, "Okay, we can all walk out of here alive if only you give me the formula." Olga says, "No, don't do it, don't do it!"
Oh, for the special poison.
And Swayze says, "No, it's the only way we can be together." And he winks at her. And he gives Wayne Knight the formula. Also unclear where he had it.
Storing it, right. Well,
yes.
It's just a recipe for borscht, is it? It's gotta be, right?
Maybe.
No.
Wow, that joke didn't
work at all, did it?
I love borscht. It's so delicious.
Borscht is great.
Anyway.
You guys are weird.
Okay. So Wayne Knight takes the formula. He lets Jennifer Grey go. She and Swayze have a very tender kiss. And then we follow him out in the getaway car, and he opens up the box, and in doing so, he seems to break some sort of seal, and a mysterious liquid pours out over his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a note inside that says, "Did the bear tell you that he made two doses? Get your serviette dirty dancing out of here. God bless the USA, Dimitri."
And since it's on a piece of paper, it's center camera, down the barrel to get that title.
Dragoshin looks shocked, but then he collapses in the back seat shortly after.
Naturally.
So back in the theater, Olga and Dimitri, they kiss again. She says, she figures out that the microphone must have been fake, or surely American hero Dimitri would never have given it to Wayne Knight.
Right, sure.
And he says, it's in a safe place. So then the camera cuts to Olga's mother. She's doing 80s style fitness in Central Park. Yep. 80s fitness. That's a category of fitness.
Yes, it is.
This podcast is familiar with that one. Yeah,
yes, right.
The summer wins.
And for some reason, she's wearing Dimitri's jacket. I guess it's, you know, like March weather or something in Central Park.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Leotard and a leather jacket with an American eagle on the back. Yep.
I was going to say March weather like Lee's tank top right now, but I mean, whatever.
It is a little confusing.
So the camera zooms in on a small patch sewn on the inside of the leather jacket, and as she exercises, a small bit unravels, and we see inside the canister of microfilm. Roll credits to an original title song by Wham.
Oh, okay.
By Wham.
Not bad. Not bad.
Also, what's that? After the credits are finished, there's a bonus scene.
Oh.
Olga's mother walks to a payphone and dials a number. And when the other end picks up, she says, "Tell Comrade Gorbachev that we've recovered the formula." The end.
Question mark?
Question mark.
I like that twist.
Yeah.
A little foreshadowing on that one. There was a sequel to this movie. It, however, happened... It's 17 years later?
Actually, a prequel. It's a prequel.
Oh!
Sequel, prequel.
Bummer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it was not good, is my understanding.
It actually came out the same week as the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Wait, really?
Ooh, yep. Fuck.
So it got
also take place. Mm-hmm. It took place in Cuba, so it lines up with Tom's thing pretty well, I think.
Yeah, so the sequel takes place right as the Cuban Revolution is breaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this movie has nothing to do with war. So.
No, not even a little. Not even a little.
Yeah. Is it about like the plight of the poor Bacardi family?
No.
Well,
Seth, do you have that one sentence summary pulled up?
Yeah, I got it here among a number of other things, but yeah, I got it. Dirty Dancing, which is a 1987 Seamless. Movie. Yeah, Seamless. Yep. Right. All right, so here's the IMDb one sentence many commas summary.
As is the custom, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that did happen last week, huh?
Rather similar to my script in many ways.
Yes. Spending the summer at a Catskills resort with her family, Frances, quote, a baby, end quote, Hausman falls in love with the camp's dance instructor, Johnny Castle.
Johnny fucking what a name. Castle. Yeah,
what a
that's
name.
A great name.
Some good shit.
It's second.
But... No,
second only to the name Patrick Swayze.
Yes.
Oh
boy.
So,
how do we want to get into this, boys?
Yeah, I mean, I guess let me try to give a quick, slightly more in-depth summary for Tom. I mean, obviously, everyone who's listening has seen this fucking movie.
Before you get into that, I definitely thought that I had seen this movie, but I clearly hadn't. And the person, so I thought that it was actually the plot of Footloose, and the person I was with thought it was the plot of an Australian movie called Strictly Ballroom. Yeah.
Which is, I believe, Baz Luhrmann's first movie.
It was. And we were both incredibly surprised when none of the plot points from either of those movies showed up in this thing.
Wait, is Baz Luhrmann Australian?
Yeah.
Oh. I was going to make a joke about that explained so much, but it doesn't really. His movies are just not very good.
I'm not a fan.
They are visually very striking.
Yes. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Apparently I also had not seen this movie. And that's the important point. So everything was new to me, and I have some thoughts. Anyway, so, yeah. Take it away.
Do you think you had the time of your life watching this movie?
Oh, no. Now we're doing it.
I get that from the commercial.
Okay. So that was the commercial hallmark?
Did you ever feel this way before?
Always felt this way before.
Was there a lift in the commercial? Were there visuals?
Yeah, I remember the exact situation Tom was referring to because there was a commercial in which someone does the lift, and I yelled at the TV, they did the lift! And Tom was just...
I'm like, what the fuck are you
talking what's
about?
Going on?
how did you know what this generic movie or generic like dance sequence was going to end in?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, got it.
Okay.
All right, Lee, what's your short version
for Tom and no one else.
Yes.
Jennifer Grey plays Baby, the younger child of Emily Gilmore and Lieutenant Lenny Briscoe. and Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast.
Fantastic.
Anyway, so she played. They go, and she has an older sister. They go to a Catskills resort for a summer vacation. They're going to be there for a few weeks. The father knows the owner that, like, this little minor subplot, like, they go way back kind of thing.
It feels important to mention that this came out in the 80s, but takes place in the 60s.
It's 63.
Summer of 63. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's less Reagan era than my movie.
There are some tie-ins.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first, like, bit of the movie... Baby is like meeting all of the people who work at the resort, since her father, who's a doctor, that is very important, knows the owner, and like all of the wait staff and stuff are like one of them is a grandson, and most of them are like, they're Ivy League kids, like over the summer. Yeah. So they're like those are the kids who are supposed to entertain the daughters of the guests.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. That becomes very important.
They all have sweaters tied around their neck.
More or less.
Pretty close. Yeah, they might as well.
Yeah.
Baby finds this all very tedious because they're all kind of assholes and so she goes and she meets up with like the dance instructor kids. And she goes to this crazy dance where like it's just amazing professional dancers dancing the like a greatest hit, literal greatest hits album of 60 songs, which they did release two different soundtracks for this movie, and both of them went number one on the charts.
I get the 80s one. The 60s one is confusing, but I guess noted, the audience for this was stratified.
I liked the 60s music so much more than all of the 80s garbage in this.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that as we go on.
We definitely will, because it's
very confusing. But so at this big dance party thing, she kind of meets Patrick Swayze's character. He's the main dance instructor, along with his, like, who we find out is like his childhood best friend, this woman named Penny.
Oozing sex. It is just dripping out of that
Patrick,
boy.
Yeah, that's Baby and Patrick Swayze end up having some like chemistry, but like that gets revisited later. Penny ends up getting pregnant by one of the waiter boys, the proper gentleman, more or less,
Is reading The Fountainhead over and over again. Oh, which so baby, I have some comments about.
Yeah, so Baby asks, he's like, Penny's in trouble. You need to take care of this and help her. And he's like, here's my copy of The Fountainhead. Read this. You'll understand why I'm not going to help her out.
Yeah.
By the way, I need that back. It has annotations in it. Like, fucking the worst. This dude is the worst.
Also, he clearly hasn't learned from The Fountainhead if he's giving The Fountainhead to someone else.
Very nice.
Like, not only a dick bag, but an idiot.
Yeah. So, this is where the plot really kicks in. Baby gets her father to give her money, and she won't tell him why, and she gives it to Penny to get the abortion.
Right.
Baby, at the same time, starts training with Patrick Swayze, whose character is Johnny, to replace Penny at a show at a different hotel, because they're going to lose out on a bunch of money and jobs if they don't perform.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get these like great training montages of them learning the routine.
So good.
Yeah, it's very good. There's like a scene in a lake where they're learning how to do lifts and stuff. Fast forward, they've gone and done the show. and Penny has gotten her abortion, but like the doctor, since abortions were illegal, it was a back alley kind of deal, and the doctor really fucked her up. Baby goes and gets her father, and he saves Penny's life, basically. So he is now like, won't even look at Baby. He's like, you lied to me. You're not the person I thought you were. All this bullshit. I don't want you to spend any time with these people anymore. She's in love with Johnny.
This feels like an important time to explain the ages of all these people. Can you drop that in?
Yeah.
At the time of filming, Patrick Swayze was 35, and he was playing a 24-year-old.
Sounds right.
Jennifer Grey was 27, and she's playing a 17-year-old.
Okay.
So, in real life, they were 8 years apart. In movie life, they were 7 years apart. It's weird no matter how you slice it.
Yeah.
Although, at least they, like, de-aged them by the same amount. Roughly.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a weird consolation prize, but yes.
Yeah, so we get
It's not great. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We get a lot of stuff from here on of their, like, relationship. They're, like, you know, they have a ton of chemistry. They, you know, she's clearly having her sexual awakening. All this stuff. Eventually, Patrick Swayze also, like, gives private lessons to the Lonely Housewives kind of thing. One of them is very jealous, and because he won't give her another lesson, she accuses him of robbery, and he's about to get fired, and Baby's like, no, it wasn't him, he was with me all night. So,
he's... But how did she know that?
Well, he's cleared of the robbery, but they fire him anyway because he was with a guest.
God.
Yeah. Baby's father now is like, I can't even look at you. Like, this is awful. Yeah.
Not only are you a good friend, but you're in love with someone. How dare you?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we fast forward now to the like end of summer talent show / dance at this resort. Yeah. And this is where one of the most famous lines of the movie comes in. Everybody who's in a talent show is on stage singing this fucking terrible song that I love. Just for some reason love.
That is inexplicable.
And the whole
garbage.
Yeah, well, one of the through lines of the movie is Patrick Swayze and all the dance kids want to do something like different and revolutionary for the end of the year show.
Uh-huh.
And the resort doesn't want them to. They want to do the same old tired stuff. So Swayze walks in and he walks over to the table that Baby and her family are sitting at. And the way the table is set up, it's against the wall. And Jennifer Grey, Baby, is literally sitting in a corner. And he walks up.
This is semantics. She's in a corner where they put some drywall up. It's like a 6-inch corner. It's just barely.
Yeah.
Like,
so he walks up.
No, it was clearly a structural column.
It was. It was that, a load-bearing column. Was,
yeah. So like she was in the nook of a structural column.
But if this is the hallmark of the movie, like, make it a real corner. What are you doing?
So
do the
Swayze
quote,
walks
Lee.
Up
do the fucking
unannounced, unannounced, and he just looks at her father, Jerry Orbach, and he goes, "No one puts Baby in a corner." Puts his hand out. She takes his hand. So I know that we're making very light of this. This is like a very big moment in the movie. And like, I know that in the script, I'm sure this is meant as like, this is metaphorical as well as literal. But nothing about Patrick Swayze's character up to this point makes me think he would even know what the word metaphor means.
So, not even close.
Or corner.
Or corner. So like, I am of the opinion that this very powerful moment in the movie is an accident in terms of characterization.
Yeah.
But anyway, he pulls her up and they do the like routine that they learned together. And earlier in the movie when they did it at the other hotel,
they never got it right.
They never did the lift.
Yeah, correct.
They did everything but the lift. So now they and all the dance kids from the movie are like helping out. They're like they're doing their routine as well.
All of a sudden, it's West Side Story. Like it's everyone is choreographed. It's
and
amazing.
That is one of the dance moves. Like they do a lot of like
like let's play it cool, boys.
Oh yeah,
pretty much. Yeah,
I hate it so much.
I need to say how much I love this movie and this scene. But anyway, they do the lift finally, and it's like this breathtaking fucking bullshit. Yeah. Swayze and Jennifer Grey, they're leaving together. They're about to go, and her father walks up, and he's like, "I know that you were," because one of the things is he thought that Patrick Swayze's character caused Penny to get pregnant, and encouraged
instead of fountainhead dick bag,
right, and encouraged her to go get an abortion from an unsafe doctor, earlier in this part of the movie, the fountainhead dickbag is like, "Hey, thanks for helping Penny out of that problem I got her into." And he's like, "You're a piece of shit. Get out of my face."
Okay,
like,
so he has read The Fountainhead.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jerry Orbach, he walks up to them as they're... He walks up to them as they're leaving, and he's like, "I know that I heard what happened. Like, you're a good person. I was wrong. I'm going to admit that I'm wrong." And he's like, "Cool, man, cool." And then he looks at, you know, and he looks at Babe and he goes, "Baby, you were amazing up there." And it's like, "I'm going to let you go and have sex with this older man now." Like, and that's, you know, that's the end of the movie. It's great.
It's a father giving away his daughter. Yeah.
More or less. It's, you know, like, I know just the nature of giving, like trying to give a quick summary is I think that sounded very flippant, but I genuinely think this movie is wonderful. I love this movie. Like,
All right. So I want to jump in here. It needs to be said. And so this is set in the 60s. But never say the words pregnancy or abortion in this movie ever.
Yeah.
They refer to it constantly as a situation or a problem.
Yep, yeah, that's true. They do that.
Although I was doing some reading, and apparently this movie is cited by like different like feminist critics as being one of the better handlings of abortion in a movie.
Hmm. Well, they do tackle it head on, and she has it, and it's a bummer because it was, you know, done, like, botched, essentially. Mm-hmm. And
it was an unlicensed doctor that, like, totally fucked it up and required, you know, baby's father to come in. And
right. Yeah.
Save
so
the
I,
day. Yeah.
I think that was the situation back then, I assume. No pun intended. But
well, I mean, Roe v. Wade wasn't until 73, so, like...
Right.
Like abortion rights, more or less, or
lack thereof.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof was not really established anywhere until around then. So
I mean, this is
I mean, it was legal in several states. So,
it was, I but mean, not in New York, particularly.
Yeah. Oh, really? Not in New York? I would have.
I don't.
Thought
I,
been
do not,
of
I do not. Believe
man.
So.
They don't like that shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's a. I mean, the whole like. The tension in the movie is between, like, you know, the normal people and then, like, the rich white elite. So I think it's a lot of that.
It's definitely a classist thing, yeah.
See, I was going to characterize it as between the normal people and those dirty, poor dancers.
Oh. Well, I think that makes you a rich white elite, but...
Well, Seth, I mean, I think has revealed this on the show before, but, you know, most of the rich people in this movie are very coded as being Jewish, and I know Seth grew up in a Jewish household.
Yeah, yeah so, like, the Jewiness of it all.
That's your word, not ours. Yeah.
In the original script, Patrick Swayze's character is far more ethnic. He is a leader of basically an Italian gang of dancers.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
For sure, yeah.
Oh, ethnic, but only in like a sense that would have made sense in the 60s.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Billy Zane was originally going to play the role, but he could not dance.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I noted at the end that the final dance scene has actual real life black people in it, and this seems completely out of character for this
movie. Well, there are several black characters in the first dance scene as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're only in the dirty dancing clubs and the whatnot. But yeah, it's when they show up and then all the old stodgy white people are just like, "What the fuck?" And then but then they're won over because
yeah, they get into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's fun.
It is.
We should. Oh, I think Lord. We should talk about like what our take, like our crazy little topics of conversation are. Does anybody want to start? I'll start if no one else does want to.
Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
So
yeah.
Most of my stuff is all behind the scenes kind of things that I wanted to bring up. So first of all, the choreographer for this movie was Kenny Ortega,
okay,
who directed all of the High School Musical movies. This is
well, notably, what 25 years later?
Well, wait. So like this is his big first. This is his first big job was like doing, this, or at least in film anyway.
Sure.
So some of the other stuff in here, like Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze hated each other.
Oh yeah.
Because they had done a movie prior, and I won't mention what movie just because we have a plan to do it eventually for the show.
Yeah.
But they hated each other, and like over the course of the filming, their relationship just deteriorated. Yeah. And eventually the screenwriter and producer and director all got together and they're like, you guys need to watch your audition tapes where you audition together. Because and the phrase they used was, your chemistry was breathtaking. And that was, they made them watch these, and that's how they like, you're right, we need to start being professional and like working together.
See, but both like Lee, both you and Zach were talking about how this seemed like the chemistry seemed like good.
I thought it was very good. Yeah,
I thought it looked so forced and terrible the entire time.
So like, there are specific scenes where it is just like, I may as well be watching two people actually like having sex with each other, but they're dancing. It's like,
I disagree entirely. I do not think they ever looked like they actually liked each other, even in the slightest.
But, okay, so I mean the arc of their characters was at first they did not like each other. Like notably Patrick Swayze thought
well,
she was
Jennifer
like
Grey
kind of
always
rich...
liked Patrick Swayze. That was pretty established from the beginning. She always had a crush.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. But Patrick Swayze was like not into her.
He was aloof and he was like, "Oh, rich girl, you've gone too far, but you know it,
you don't matter anyway.
Rich girl, you can get by old man's money."
I will she literally does. This song is not in the movie, but I think that's a good segue into one of the things we wanted to talk about.
Let Zach finish his point first.
Yeah, I gotta say, it was weird. I mean, I've seen this movie many times, but not recently, and it was weird to watch it again with the perspective that you telling me this real life stuff, Lee, that happened. Yeah. Like, when I knew that they didn't like each other, then I saw the little nuances between them more than I ever would have, for sure.
I mean, I think that's a fair,
I saw so much disdain in everything.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of... they tried to cover it up, but there was, like, this faux being enamored with each other that I just didn't appreciate.
See, I think Patrick Swayze actually did worse with it. Like he was just trying to act the whole time. Jennifer Grey, to her credit, was being very genuine the whole time, and there are scenes where I think she
for
was
for the most
laughing,
part I would agree
like genuinely because
oh
she
you
was
said
like,
laughing that's real. Are you talking about the scene where he's teaching her to dance and she starts to laugh?
All of them. She laughs in all of them. Like
specifically
at him,
that first that first training montage where he's teaching her how to do that. And she that was actually her laughing because they it took them so long to get the scene right.
Sure.
That she just couldn't deal with it anymore. And they left it in. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah. No, and I think that was
blooper reeled it.
Yeah, they threw in some good bloops, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think the movie was the blooper reel. Like, I don't really think they took much out because Jennifer Grey does a bunch of emoting in the movie that seems very genuine. But like in hindsight, after I know this thing, I'm like, oh, that wasn't like, oh, this is fun laughing. It was like, oh, I fucking hate Patrick Swayze laughing, which is
I guess that's
different.
Fair.
Yeah.
The thing I alluded to just a minute ago was the music. So obviously there's a lot of really like classic famous 60s songs in this movie.
Right, yeah.
There are also several 80s songs in the movie. And it's, to me at least, very unclear which ones are diegetic and which ones aren't.
Yes, indeed.
At the end, I'm sure sure you've heard the song I've Had the Time of My Life.
Even before the commercial.
Jennifer Warren and Bill Medley.
Time of my life.
So in the course of the movie, it is made explicit that this song is happening. Mm-hmm. Like it's the owner of the resort turns to the old band leader and he's like, "Do you got the sheet music for this stuff?"
He does. Like, well, and also
it's a very
I mean,
Back to the Future kind of moment.
Yeah, like when a white guy invents Johnny B. Goode.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking that the whole time was that Johnny B. Goode Back to the Future scene. And that was 84 maybe?
85 I think. So it was before it was before this movie either way. Yeah.
I noticed very early on. So I guess this I don't know was that song written for this movie?
It was.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
The vocal melody shows up. There's an actual score, like a symphonic score. And the vocal melody shows up in like minute 8, and it keeps happening through the movie.
Yeah, it's a theme that they keep repeating. Okay. Yeah.
But the actual song doesn't happen until like 8 minutes before the end. Like it's almost the end.
It's clearly
a musical foreshadowing.
It's the climactic finale. Yeah.
No, but the vocal melody shows up like
six times. Leitmotif, motherfucker.
It's, exactly.
Yes, it is.
Haha!
But there's several other other 80s songs. Like there's when their sexual tension is at a peak, they play "Hungry Eyes," the Eric Carmen song.
Yeah, sure do.
Hungry Eyes, and it's not made clear whether that's on the radio or whether we're only hearing it. The other big example is, and this one seems more obvious that it's only for the audience. a Patrick Swayze song, She's Like the Wind plays.
Yeah.
During his
I'm gonna drive away and brood
scene. You know,
there's a Patrick Swayze song. It's very upsetting.
You guys keep saying the words Patrick Swayze and song next to each other.
Yeah, dude. Zach, do you remember the song from the movie that goes, She's Like the Wind?
I feel like vaguely, yes. That was Patrick Swayze on the Vokes for that?
Yes, it was.
Wowee!
Sure was.
Oh, boy. He's a real Renaissance man, I guess.
Yeah, it appears so. So there are a few weird inserted 80s songs. And because the final one is explicitly happening in the movie, I have a lot of questions about the others.
Right,
yeah. Oh, and the only other like kind of behind the scenes thing I want to touch on is after they filmed it and edited it together, the studio was certain it was going to fail. So much so that the producer, after he watched a cut, said, burn it and collect the insurance.
Yeah.
Are there any, whatever the, like, the standard fake name is for a bad product?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
what is that name?
The director?
I mean, like, Alan Smithy? Like
Alan Smithy.
No, there wasn't, because the production company that paid for it was primarily a video company at the time, and their plan was, we're going to release it for 1 week and then immediately put it out on video. Right. And it ended up being a smash fucking success. Like, it made hundreds of millions of dollars. This was like, it became I think it was a multiple week number one movie. Like, it,
well, yeah, you said
surprise hit.
I think you said it made 170. And I don't know what it cost. It had to be like 10 or less.
I think it was like under 15. Yeah.
So it was a resounding success.
How big a deal was Patrick Swayze at this point?
Not a huge deal yet.
What?
Okay. He was a big star, but he wasn't like the kind of person that you could launch a movie.
Yeah. Is this post Roadhouse or
pre-Roadhouse by about 2.5 years.
Oh, pre-Roadhouse. Okay. Ooh,
you guys want the money numbers on this?
Please do.
Budget was $6 million. Box office?
Wow.
214.
Of that box office money, and this is another behind the scenes thing, some of that box office money is probably including the 1997 re-release. The 10-year anniversary of the movie, and I did not know this until when I read this yesterday. Conan O'Brien launched a campaign on his show at the time to have his fans do a letter writing campaign to the studio to do a 10-year anniversary re-release of the movie.
That sounds like Conan.
And it worked. Yeah. It worked. And when they announced that it was going to happen, Conan was like, goes on a show and he reports and he goes, by the way, I don't even like this movie. I just did it as a joke.
That is independently hilarious, but also, like, who doesn't like Dirty... Well, I mean, besides Seth. Who doesn't like Dirty Dancing?
I have not leveled my critique yet. I have some issues, but I never said I didn't like it.
Okay. This one's going to be super long, so let's keep trucking. Who else has some stuff they want to talk about?
I have a bunch of positive bits, so I'll let Seth go with his, negative bits.
We'll do a little compliment sandwich here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
The movie needs it, you know? Want to build up its confidence.
Yeah.
Going forward.
My points are mostly just... All right, so first off, fellas, what the hell was this weird adult summer camp that this all took place around?
Illuminati
thing. What's the where Bill Clinton and George Bush go to hang out?
This is getting a little Jewy again, but are you talking about?
New World Order.
Everything I've ever heard about this movie is it is a fairly accurate representation of Catskills, New York, summer resorts targeted at mostly Jewish patrons.
Not even just New York, like Pennsylvania, West Virginia has some of these, like where they're
It was filmed in Virginia.
Anywhere there's mountains.
Yeah, it was filmed in Virginia, North Carolina, like Right.
Which, but no, this is a big thing.
Yeah, they didn't have to change the resorts they filmed them at to make it look like a period right. appropriate.
No. This was a big thing. Well, and even the main guy at the end says, like, kids don't want to come with their parents to learn how to do the foxtrot anymore.
Indeed.
They want to go to Europe. Or whatever the fuck.
Indeed.
That was a very weird scene.
So, Tom.
Friend of the show Eva pointed out that there's no reason for there to be a subplot about the owner of the resort talking about.
No. Oh, God, no.
Why do we not want to have resorts in it? Like, that was. Didn't need that scene. they threw it in anyway.
So, Tom, this takes place at some kind of insane, inexplicable summer camp. Where adults take their also adult children to a meat market for Ivy, for Ivy League boys, where they're
and Wesleyan girls,
Ivy League boys and unsuspecting daughters.
Mm-hmm. and Wesleyan girls. You're right.
Wesleyan girls. That's the adjective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Where they just do.
God, I'm
apparently
trying to change the lyrics to West End Girls by the Pet Shop Boys in my head to make it fit, but I just can't quite do it.
No, a whole different thing. Yeah.
Okay, so it's adults taking their semi-adult children to this horrible resort where they do arts and crafts and wig. Mm-hmm. Let's say wig.
A lot of wigsmanship in this movie.
Yeah, wigsmanship. Yeah.
Wigsome. Yeah. I was gonna say wig magic, but wigsmanship is just.
Let's
as
say
good.
Both. Yeah.
and you just kind of solicit your children to have sex with the camp counselors or something.
Well, no, you explicitly try.
But then
not
get
to
upset when they actually do.
I think.
Indeed. That's exactly.
I think what you're actually soliciting them to do is have hand holding walks around the lake.
Yeah, you're trying to get them married off.
Well,
in cruelly, a wholesome
you want to ignite their passion with a sexy dance teacher and then marry them off to someone else.
To someone to show you schlub know, with some money making potential.
Patrick Swayze is
a
great pilot light, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Explicitly
if a woman agreed to be on the show, we would hear more about that.
Explicitly not the sexy dance teacher, but instead the sort of lame Ivy League kind of douchebags the summer work here.
Oh, by the way, Tom, Wayne Knight plays the, like, master of ceremonies of the resort.
He plays the stand-up comedian.
He's like the cruise director of the resort. Okay, he's got to do a little bit of everything.
He has nowhere near as big a role as I put him.
He's a real take my wife please kind of character.
He's more of the Yakov Smirnov of your situation. Where he's an interstitial character that only shows up maybe two or three times in the entire film.
But so, Seth, to your point, you're trying. they bring their daughters there to try to get them not into, quote, problems or, quote, situations.
Indeed.
Which like kind of
the net result is mostly quote problems or quote situations. Who and those boys happen to read a bunch of Ayn Rand bullshit because they're idiot morons all the time. Like, idiot moron teenagers. or man
in the
children.
60s. Fountainhead was not that old then, right?
No, Fountainhead was quite recent at this
point.
That's
like 61 or something?
I think it was 61.
He's an early adopter then.
Yes, but that sort of Randite mentality was still very, very present at that point because they just hate poor people so much.
Well, they really do. And it's great to have someone tell you that that's moral philosophy.
Oh,
yeah, certainly. Yes.
It was so frustrating, but like it was pointed out in a negative light, which I appreciate because I wish we still would point out Randian theory in such a negative light because goddamn.
I think we did for a very long time, and it's made a resurgence. That's the issue
in recent memory.
Anyway, bring it back to the sexiness, Seth.
Oh, okay. So
more about Ayn Rand.
Yeah. So we had we have our sexy boys. We have Patrick Swayze, who is just
bunch of regular Shawn Michaels up in this camp.
He is pinnacle sex in this.
His waistline is non-existent. Shoulder width is incredible. And he's a regular Johnny Bravo.
He's
just like a triangle.
He is not wearing a shirt in most of this movie.
Yeah,
and he is just oozing it out of him. And I think the sequel to this film should be called Dirty Dancing 2: The Secret of the Ooze of sexiness. Because goddamn,
he oozes.
It is leaking out of him.
It's not just machismo that oozes in this movie. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
The other major criticisms that
he
I had
a medical issue. It's all pus.
Yeah. Oh no.
I mean
gross. Oh, Jesus Christ.
So
what was your other issue?
The other issues that I have is the sister who
wonderful.
An unsung hero of this movie for sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't you fellas talk about the sister for
so
a hot second?
The thing I love about her sister is her sister is like the thing that she's raging against in human form. Like it's this person. She just wants a husband. Like that's what she's here for. Like she's a little older and she goes to school, but she only goes to school because
she's a Wesleyan girl. Yeah.
Yeah, she's an English major at Wesleyan, which is a thing they make a joke about in the movie.
Sure enough.
But
Wesleyan is a fine institution.
Absolutely. And I should say this, people who have one, nay two English degrees are great people. Speaking in personal experience,
including those of us who have interdisciplinary humanities degrees.
Well, yeah. Anyway,
we're getting real close to doxing, fellas.
Let's take a view out before I talk about more Russian literature for a hot second.
The thing I love most about Baby's sister is almost every scene in which she speaks to Baby, whether it's
she
taunting. Whether it's taunting her or giving her just an exposition dump or like being supportive, or every scene she's in the movie, she makes zero eye contact and says the weirdest fucking shit. Like there's a scene where the framing is the sister, Lisa, is the sister's name Lisa?
It is Lisa. Yeah. But pronounced Lisa often. But
okay. So they're it's nighttime, they're both in bed. Uh-huh. Lisa's bed is in the foreground, Baby's bed is in the background a little bit, and it's shot straight on, and they're both facing the camera, so they're not looking at each other.
And Lisa,
with her eyes closed, just says, "I think tomorrow night I'm going to give it up to Robbie. He doesn't even know that I'm going to go all the way." And then, silence for four beats. Scene is over. That's it. Yeah.
It's too much.
Near the end when Baby is having some issues, like she says, "I do your hair, Baby."
Baby's sitting on the bed, Lisa's on her knees on the bed, like talking directly into Baby's ears, going, "I'll do your hair, Baby. I'll make you look pretty."
I have another one about this. So the shitty gets dance partner pregnant guy, Robbie Gould.
Noted NFL kicker, also
apparent time traveler. he comes up to Jennifer Grey and sister at I guess like the first day of adult camp. He says, he looks at that. They're trying on wigs at this point, which I think Lee mentioned earlier. Like, it's fucking insane. Like, what?
No, it's
what
so
world
inexplicable.
You go to
I
the
love wigs.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of wig work.
I love wearing wigs.
Yeah, it's so weird.
There's a lot of wigs. Hates wearing wigs. Let's not go there, please.
Yeah. Let's not say things we cannot say.
Well, on this podcast. He looks over sister's shoulder and says, Yeah, if I make pretty good tips this year, I might get my Alfa Romeo. And then 3 seconds of silence pass where she's combing her wig out, and then she goes, "That's my favorite car." Doesn't look at him. Doesn't look at him. Doesn't do anything.
No, zero eye contact. Just further wonderful things about this character. I think at least she looks, God. And I think this had to be on purpose, she looks just like Joan Crawford. Which is like very creepy thing to look like. Yeah. Like, you know, if you're not Joan Crawford.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people tell me often.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, no,
it's really creepy how much I look like Joan Crawford. Mm-hmm.
Joan Crawford's an interesting one. I thought that was Laura Flynn Boyle for, I think I told you guys this, for a long time.
You did, yeah.
She looks very much like a Wayne's World era Laura Flynn Boyle.
you're right. Yeah, same haircut. Yeah.
But so she's like the unsung hero of this movie because her acting is like intentionally bad. Like, well, she plays it very dry and very stupid, but it turns out that it's very good.
So there's a scene, like, the talent show, she performs this weird song called Hula Hana. And like, it's like, it's like, this song can't possibly exist. And in a scene where something far more serious is happening, she's singing it in the background of the scene. And it's like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah,
I looked it up to see if this is a real song. The actress who played this character wrote the song and asked the director. He was like, "Hey, I wrote this song, and I think it really hammers home how my character is oblivious to everything that's happening around her."
Right. Yeah. Like, it's way better when you know that she was doing it intentionally. Yeah. Like, it makes way more sense.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
We talked way more about this character than anyone ever should.
It was very inexplicable. You know what? I'm more or less done. So go ahead.
Right,
go
done?
Ahead, Zach.
Okay.
Talk about positive things. Cause
all right.
Such a long episode. More this bullshit, is so good. But... I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a precedent that I'm glad we're setting right now.
Yeah, no. If ever there was a movie for it, yeah. Okay. 10 minutes in. We can never really know for sure, but I bet my entire life savings that Jerry Orbach was born looking like a 70-year-old man.
Is Jerry Orbach the Fountainhead dude?
No. No, he's the dad.
He's the Law and Order
SVU.
That makes way more sense.
Yeah.
No, he's Law and Order OG.
Oh, OG. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rest in peace, Jerry Buck, I think.
That's
right?
True. 2004. I was in New York City when he died, and I saw the ticker along a building saying, "Jerry Orbach is dead." And I was like, what?
It's your own personal Jerry Orbach.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. oh, boy.
Yeah, no. I just...
Yep, they just... There's a to this day, an eternal image of him on the Freedom Tower.
Your goofs are better than mine. I don't know.
It's a silhouette, so it's just a really big candle. Like, you know.
He looks the same here as he did, I think, in the 2000s. Like,
yep,
hey,
I agree.
Do you guys not think he would have been better suited to play the owner of the camp? Because when they all get out of the car, he could have went, "Be our guest, be our guest."
Oh.
Yeah, see?
I mean, I guess.
Got them Jerry Orbach goofs.
Yeah.
Made of real gorilla chest. See this sweater? There's no better than an authentic Irish
setter.
Was my camp.
Now we own Al Jean, a bunch of them.
Oh, no.
Oh, fuck.
And James L. Brooks.
And Sam Simon's dead, so we don't have to pay him.
That we were legally distinct from the original.
It's fair use if you're bad enough.
Yeah. We can make that argument. That's fine.
Yeah.
We'd lose, but yeah.
Right. We're garbage.
I think they have very good lawyers.
Yeah.
15 minutes in, we get to the first nasty... I've been deleting shit on my notes like real fast.
Okay.
I'm sure
I gave you plenty of time.
Well, yeah. 15 minutes in, we get the first nasty rub your bits together dance party.
Indeed.
It was great.
With watermelons.
I noted. Yeah, yeah.
Inexplicable watermelons.
Yeah. Well, that enters the scene. Yeah. No. Like, hey,
so
Jennifer Grey.
She helps Patrick Swayze's cousin, the character of his cousin, carry watermelons. That's how she gets herself into the party. She helps him bring the watermelons in. And her first line to Patrick Swayze is, "I carried a watermelon." Uh-huh. And then she continues to be mortified about that.
And cousin looks...
suggestive?
No.
Oh, yeah. Cousin looks just like John Bon Jovi. It's too much.
Who does he look like?
John Bon Jovi.
Oh, shit. Yeah, he does.
But yeah, so I noted at this point, the pacing is very good in this movie. Like, the movie's called Dirty Dancing, and we get to the actual, like, aggressively sexual dancing, like, 15 minutes into this. This scene with all of the sex dancing is egregious. In a word, it's egregious.
Like, it's were true. You a parent, you would not want your child to go to this resort.
Like, I do not resonate with Jerry Orbach's character in this movie, but I was watching the scene going like, god damn, take it down a notch. It's a bit much.
Can't we go watch a nice murder film instead?
Yeah, of course.
But no, I think you're right, Zach. This movie is like 94 minutes long. They waste zero time.
It is a
well-paced movie.
It is.
Yeah.
I did also write here, and I think, Tom, you touched on this. Did the mayor from Footloose happen to see Dirty Dancing and then decide that this is what dancing was, and then, like, no, outlawed. Fully outlawed.
Yeah.
Footloose was slightly before this movie, is that right?
Yeah, that was in 84?
Like, 83? I think it's 84, yeah.
It's either 83 or 84, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
God, I love that movie, too.
Also haven't seen it, incidentally. I looked up the plot, so
well,
just for this script.
Well, I clearly thought that this movie was actually Footloose, and then I realized the horrible mistake that I had made. Mm-hmm.
Zach, what else? Let's keep rolling. Let's roll.
Yeah, yeah. I think I have like three more. So moving forward to like Act Two, in the eventual post-abortion Jennifer Grey Schwayze about to bone dance scene when they first hook up in his like weird camping house. Jennifer Grey does a long swooping butt grab on Patrick Swayze. And literally the first thing I thought was, my God, that butt is chiseled out of stone. That is made in God's image. It's so good.
No. Surely
it's like Zeus came to Earth in the form of a butt to have sex with a
like
mortal.
Lightning struck the divine that butt gluteus. And it became Patrick Swayze's butt. It's very good.
The divine gluteus maximus.
I
just got sick of being bulls. Butts are way better.
Fuck swans. I'm gonna be a butt.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of shit about how good Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze are in general. We talked about that. Some shit about the nobody put baby in a corner line is like such a throwaway. It's a bummer. I guess. Finally, the final dance is just so good. We talked about it a bit, but like,
it's so lucky that she wore movement clothes to that dinner. Like,
I know. Well, I will say the one weird thing. So like, Patrick Swayze leaves.
The one weird thing. Okay.
Well, all right. One of the weird things. Patrick Swayze leaves to go get the rest of the Sharks or maybe the Jets. I don't remember.
No.
And brings them back. And yeah. Yeah.
Tonight. Yeah.
So they're doing their whole very choreographed dance. And it happens for minutes at a time. And Jennifer Grey is just standing on the stage by herself.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah. And the camera not showing her takes care of a lot of that. But I get what you're saying.
It was super weird.
They pan back to her and she's like moving her skirt around and she's just waiting for Patrick to come back.
Shoulder shakes.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so I watched this movie at work today, and I I had to get up at the last scene when they did the lift and all that shit. I had to pause that like four or five times and just walk around my office a little bit and just just really shake it out. I was like, no, it's too much. I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry at work. It's no good.
You didn't have to, like, you know, put your hands into your pockets and, like, very aggressively stretch out the front of your pants. And
well, I mean,
I don't know if I'd say very aggressive, but, you know.
No, like, it was getting close, yeah. Oh, it's very good. All right. Well, we've gone on in a while. Yeah, let's do it.
Well, so yeah. I do. I feel like we do have to bring up.
Okay.
So, and I was talking to a friend of the show, Eva, about this, and I've actually heard this on other shows before, where a lot of men don't really come around to enjoying this movie until they're a little bit older. I think this is very much a coming of age movie for women.
Sure, of course.
That's sort of the impression I've gotten.
Yeah, and like for men,
as a man who is becoming somewhat older, who has not seen the film,
so like I think from what I've pieced together, just from like listening to other people and talking with other people, like
yeah.
a lot of women really get into this movie when they're young because like it's something that's this isn't something that they could necessarily experience in their real life. Without getting in trouble, more or less, you know? Like, yeah,
quote unquote, yeah.
It's a gateway into yeah. like some, you know, eroticism, more or less. And for guys, sure. I think it's kind of like, oh, that's a girl movie. It's got dancing in the title. And then when you get older, you're like, shit, that movie's hot. Like, fuck, okay, this is a good movie.
That's,
yeah,
that's what I was gonna ask. Is it? I hope it's not like like Jerry Orbach's character, like is. Relatable because I'm a dad now. Like it's not that. It's just like it's like I like the earlier parts of the Patrick Swayze part of my fictional life that are fun and good. Is that what it is? I hope.
I think it's more just like as a young man, I was like I don't have any siblings, but like my cousins who are girls were like, "Ooh, we're gonna watch Dirty Dancing," and they'd get all excited, and I'd be like, "Yeah, it's a movie about dancing. Yeah. I don't want to watch that."
Oh no, yeah.
I mean, I think that probably explains 95% of why I haven't seen this movie.
Right, and then you get older and realize that
at
like,
least before I was 23.
Yeah,
yeah.
You get older and you're like, you don't act like an adolescent boy anymore, and you realize like, oh shit, this is like,
yeah,
a movie that I watched, and ooh, like these are very attractive people being very attractive together, and
yeah,
like,
ooh. Yeah. Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah.
And you maybe realize. Why all of those young women were watching the movie when you were younger? Uh-huh. Like, yeah. Uh-huh. It's
because anybody would fuck Patrick Swayze.
Yeah,
clearly. Obviously, yes.
Yeah.
I found him aloof and kind of an asshole. So,
oh.
but independently of the film,
agree to disagree.
Johnny Castle was a tortured genius, and I will hear nothing less.
Johnny Castle.
Well.
Wow. All right. Well, let's do the thing. Seth, it sounds like you hated it the most, so you go first.
Yeah.
Well, as is my style, I'll start with the faked one first. And so, Tom, I love your White Knights Baryshnikov. Beautiful.
I was gonna say, I think it's pronounced Thom.
Duh.
Well. No, because that interdental fricative doesn't exist in Russian, but okay.
All right, job market.
Yeah. There's no pseudo-Cyrillic theta there.
Well, that there in Cyrillic,
this show's got something for everybody, doesn't it?
Well, in Cyrillic, there is no theta, but that's all right. In Greek, sure, but anyway, Thom, I quite enjoyed your spy dramas because you clearly were pandering, even though you didn't realize it. And
That makes it even better. That makes it way better, yeah.
I mean, I knew Lee, and so I figured the rest of you were people who would enjoy a good Rocky IV type movie.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean,
I hate that movie. But
yeah.
But still.
Yeah.
And you really, you know, hit home with a bunch of Russian bullshit, because that's clearly my style.
Das Zarina Das,
and I like how many twists there were. Again, very much my style. Inexplicable twist. So
yes.
I am going to
give you in this beautiful Very complicated, very confusing film. An 8.5.
Oh,
oh, wow. Damn.
Very high for Seth. I think
fucking great score from Seth.
I think that I would very much like the fact that I would be confused and not be able to anticipate where we were going.
In the world ballet classic scoring system, that's a 10.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and
well, yeah, because a 5 is winning. So
right, that's a
and
double,
Olga are,
double
a, are the Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer. Of
yeah,
time.
And
all,
and
yeah.
like yeah. I was a gymnast for many years, and the ballet and gymnastics are reasonably closely aligned in terms of.
Yeah.
You know, many things. So
only gymnastics people say that. Ballet people don't say that.
Whoa!
As someone who did a little bit of gymnastics, I agree with Sussex.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, to be fair,
you get the fuck out of here.
The countries that compete, the countries that compete in these things are also often the same.
Indeed. And that's, I mean, like, there's...
Russia does win every ballet gold medal.
Listen, Seth, it's not gymnastics, it's gymnastics.
Okay, oh boy.
It's gymnastics.
I mean, like, ballet, like, the ability to catch a 100-pound person flying through the air and do it gracefully is just one of
100?
The most...
You think ballerinas
weigh 100
pounds?
Yes, because anorexia.
Well,
let's be honest, if they're like potentially being cut for being too fast.
Yeah,
they weigh 75-80.
Ballet has
maximum.
A lot of fucked up problems.
Yeah, but
it's not good. Oh,
how
it's
many
not
stones
good.
Would a person weigh if they were?
Well,
yeah.
a stone
one?
Is
I think
what?
One.
8 point something?
14 or is it 11? I don't remember anymore. It's 14.
I think it's 14. Yeah.
How?
Yeah, I think it's 14.
Do all of you know that?
Well,
study abroad, man.
Also, I had a doctor who was British, and
wait,
does
he refer to you in stones?
She did.
Oh fuck.
So
way to go. Way to go. You know, the doctor was the mother. That's why.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's why they couldn't do the surgery.
Oof. Anyway, I like your gymnastics menagerie. And by that I mean ballet menagerie. Anyway,
are we on?
Yep.
As for the real movie, I know you
it's
boys.
It's gonna be good.
I know you. I know you boys love it. It was an enjoyable enough watch, but I had
high praise for you.
It is for me. I notably hate everything.
Yeah.
I really didn't see chemistry. You look into Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze's eyes, and I didn't see a spark, which, like, you know, that's asking a lot, because that is,
1987.
Like, well, I was gonna say, like, I didn't see the emotional connection that you guys apparently did see, but, it was still entertaining enough, so I'll give it a 7.4.
That felt forced. I really don't think you enjoyed it that much.
Yeah,
that seems very high.
It is forced, but you know, like from a like sociocultural theory standpoint, like you guys as my friends are kind of forcing me into aggrandizing it a little more than I would do ordinarily.
The peer pressure aspect of this podcast is heavy. That's fair.
Yeah.
So it was actually a 6.9.
Well. Okay.
Nice.
IMDb. The IMDb for this film is a 6.9.
Ah, nice.
Really?
It is.
Do you think that was engineered by, like, men's rights activists or, like, sex-positive feminists?
That was engineered by the producers of The Americans, starring those actors that did a weird 69 thing on that show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Zach,
Lee, what did you do think? The thing.
Yeah, Zach.
Oh, okay. I'll
be
first.
One of you
no,
two,
you do
please
you do
give some ratings, because I just ranted for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lee, you go.
So Yeah, I think for Tom's, I'm going to give it a 6.5.
All right.
It would be higher, but I really wanted it to just end with the flags unfurling at the thing. I want it to be like a peaceful resolution.
See, like no, more, but I like more that. Uplifting. I like that extra thing. I really like that extra thing.
I don't think the extra thing was bad. I like an uplifting 80s ending.
Fair enough.
Real movie. This is something that, like I even alluded to just a few minutes ago, it took me a long time to come around to, but it is, I think, honestly, at this point, in my top 20 favorite movies, like, without even hesitating.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it is just fun. It's like, it's really, it's a sexy movie. I don't know. I gotta give it a 9. I'm going high on this one. I think it's a great movie. Oh, man. So good. Zach.
I feel like, Tom, you were not privy to these discussions, but I think a week ago when we found out that we were actually doing Dirty Dancing, I said, man, Tom's up against some real fucking bangers on this one. Like, it's very good. Okay, Tom's movie, I'm going to go 8.5 on that one.
Okay.
It's very good. It's very good.
That's how high I was.
Yeah. I would absolutely watch that. It's like Rocky IV, as you said, but like more ballet. It's very good.
Rocky IV, but ballet was basically my premise.
Well, it's the general aesthetic of the movie. It's very good. Yeah.
I think I can see that. Yeah.
And the idea that every Russian is
a double agent.
Is both a spy and a ballerina.
Yeah.
I do not know what you talk about, comrade.
Yeah.
Das Zarina Das.
In at least one draft, I was trying to figure out a way to make Yakov Smirnoff also a ballerina.
I feel like,
I don't think that's going to fly, dude.
Yeah. Well, in the 80s, in the late 80s, I mean.
I don't think that was going to fly even in the 80s.
Yeah,
that is
a qualification makes no sense. All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
That notwithstanding, this I think is my first one. Actual, that's a patented Lee 10-10-10.
Ooh,
gotta go 10-10-10 on that.
Wow, that might be the first real movie that's ever gotten a 10 on our show.
It's just so fucking good, like. I knew it was good, and then I watched it at work, and I cried at work, and it was very upsetting for me.
It's a breeze. I think it's a breeze to watch. Like, it's
like
so
the first thing I thought about when I finished the movie was, God damn it, I want to watch this again. Like, over and over and over and over.
And anyone who follows me on Twitter, that's at FakingMoveLeads,
it should be said
that I tweet about this movie constantly because I watch it drunk a lot. Like,
it should be said, Lee, you sent us a lot of tweets after the fact of this movie.
That's true.
I think we were both like, where were these my whole life? They were good goofs.
They were accurate. They were quite accurate.
This and Roadhouse, I think I've got a Patrick Swayze thing.
Roadhouse.
Well, we're going to have to bleep
great
that.
Movie.
No, there's a human that hasn't seen Roadhouse, and we're going to find him.
Oh, speaking of
videos.
Human in this digital room?
Yeah.
Tom, have you not seen Roadhouse?
No, I've seen Roadhouse. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Shit. All right.
Great movie.
I mean that opening scene, well, I won't talk about
everything
it,
about it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I have some issues.
I mean, no,
naturally,
man. There are some issues for sure. Yeah,
I'm just the general bummer of everything forever.
It sounds like Tom made a wonderful movie this week.
He did.
Yeah,
he did.
No, and he just happened to go up against another wonderful movie.
I was gonna say, can we just as a podcast, like, actual Dirty Dancing is very good for most of us, but let's say Tom won. Let's say Tom won. I'm okay with that.
I mean, I'm okay with losing to Dirty Dancing. You don't have to.
Well, exactly. Well, Tom, I cannot wait for you to actually watch Dirty Dancing. It's going to be so good.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be like maybe tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, it's on Prime right now, so yeah.
Yeah, Yeah.
Let's say this. It's a hard tie or a soft loss. Either way, we'll go with that.
It's always
a hard tie in Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, for real, though.
Tom hasn't seen Dirty Dancing, and it's either a problem or a situation. Could we say that?
Yeah, okay, I like that. Hey, guys, what happens next week? Because I honestly don't know.
Oh, I have it. Seth is gonna inside baseball with. Oops, no, I think he knew that.
I knew that there was baseball involved. Yeah.
Oh, you're doing Major League?
No,
baseball.
No, it's not Major League. That's a top 10 movie for me.
Oh yeah,
really top 10.
I quite like
Major League, incidentally.
Yeah.
But I think I know enough about it that I.
So wait, Seth, did you promise not to do a baseball movie, or are you gonna do a baseball movie?
No, he knew it was baseball.
You know what? I haven't decided yet, and I'm definitely not going to remake Hit Film Rookie of the Year, starring Daniel Stern.
Sure, sure.
We still didn't name the movie, though. That's, yeah.
Yeah, seems good.
We named two different movies, but Seth's doing Bull Durham, everyone. Seth's doing Bull Durham.
Bull Durham is the film that I will apparently be faking next week, even though I had entirely forgotten.
Diploma, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That'll be very good. All right, so Tom, well done. You did Havana
Tom
Nights.
Did great.
And we're all
Tom
very
did
proud
a great
of you.
Job. Yeah.
Would you say, sir, that you
had
the time of your life and you
were
I never felt this way before.